We've been going through the book of Proverbs. We've been stopping along at various topics that appear throughout the book. So we've walked through anger. We've walked through keeping our heart. We've walked through wisdom itself. We've walked through trust. And this morning, we're going to look at hope. Hope. So studying through this message, I was trying to think in my mind of some of the happiest times of our life. And I think one of the discoveries that I made was that kids are the happiest things in the world. Happiest things in the world. It doesn't matter what they have, what their circumstances are, somehow they are able to be happy in them, right? So these are my two boys right here. Mismatched pajamas, no pants, and a plastic bin, and they are the happiest thing in the world, right? Just happy. And I you wonder, why is that? I think part of the reason that they're the happiest thing in the world is because every day brings something new for kids, doesn't it? Every day. I mean, kids get excited about looking forward to a nickel if they put their clothes in the drawer, don't they? This morning, my kids got excited about going to the bathroom in the toilet. We had this little party. We're all eating breakfast around the kitchen table, and I asked, who went to the bathroom in the toilet? And everybody raised their hand, and we all cheered. It was wonderful. You know, it's not as much excitement for Beth and I, but we tried. You know, we went along with it. But what is it? Why? It's because they have so much to look forward to. Actually, if you even look at your own life, probably the happiest times in your own life have been times of looking forward to something, haven't they? Times of hoping in something, times of expecting something that's going to come. So we've got great memories of high school because there was all of this change and growing taking place. Voices are changing. Other things are changing. We look forward to all the progress. We look forward to the time when we're finally a senior. We have power, right? Yeah, right. Then you go to college, okay? But in college, some of the happiest times of our life. Why? Because we're looking forward. We're hoping in that degree that's going to be a ticket so that we can go and make something of our life, right? And some of you really delighted in those 7.5 years. Yeah, happiest times in our life is when we're looking forward to something, isn't it? Maybe you meet someone and you're just looking forward to the next stage. That was the way it was with me. Yeah, I don't know about you. I have only gone out with two girls in my lifetime. I married one of them, okay, just so you know, right? So everything in my dating relationship, I look back on those things, and there were all these clearly defined stages. I remember looking forward to when I was going to tell Beth that I liked her. Like, okay, not love, okay? Love. Some of you are like, wow, don't move too fast there, buddy, all right? I remember I wrote a note with the whole express purpose of getting to the end of it and writing, I like you, and underlining it and giving it to her, okay? I was in college, people. I was in college. It was like the next stage. Some of you feel really sorry for me, but it was. And you know what? When you look at your own life, there's these looking forward to moments, even in a relationship. I like her. I love her. Engaged. Married. Kids. Settling down. Life. And there's something about our life that has hope right next to it, doesn't it? Just looking forward, expecting. It's almost like hope is this strong rope that just pulls us along to the next thing in life. And you could actually say that there is something about being human that includes hope in it, doesn't it? We're going to talk about hope this morning. But I don't know if you've noticed it. Hopeful is not really a word that describes our world today, is it? Hopeful. To doesn't really describe what we see when we interact with people in the world. Cynical and frantic, yes, but hopeful and expectant, no. I mean, we're cynical because we've hoped too many times and it hasn't come true, and so we're just cold towards hope in general. Or we're frantic because we're still looking for something that we just can't seem to find, and we're rushing to hope in the next thing. So what has happened to us? What's wrong with us, right? I mean, I think a lot of things have happened, but one of them in particular is that we get to a point where we stop progressing, right? I mean, like physically, there's a point where we stop growing, north and south, okay? We may expand. That's not what I'm talking about here, okay? Physically, there's a point where we reach our state, and that's where we're going to be. Intellectually, we reach a point where we stop growing. And so instead of hoping in progress, we begin to look for something to hope in, something to expect. We have to find something. So we look around, and the only thing we can find to hope in is our circumstances. And so we want something to be better. So instead of achieving something, we turn to accumulating something. And hope is no longer about progress. It's about improving a circumstance. It's about accumulating. It's about earning power and toys and vacations and stuff. And subtly, we move our hopes from accomplishment to accumulation. But the more that we accumulate and the more we set our hope in a circumstance getting better, the less fulfilled we feel, don't we? And hope fails us. Anybody ever been failed by hope? Ever disappointed by something that you hoped in? Yeah. Solomon is going to meet us right there, right in the middle of our disappointed, deferred hopes. So let's look at Proverbs chapter 13, verse 12 together. Solomon says this: hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. So what Solomon is going to do this morning is he's going to give us wisdom for hope. And in this surprising proverb, we actually see a summary of the Bible's teaching on hope. And I say it's surprising because if we're not careful, we look at this and we think it's very trite, actually. We look at this and we're like, that's really simple, Solomon. What are you really saying there? One theologian actually describes the book of Proverbs this way. He says, you've heard of the milk of the word and the meat of the word. Proverbs is the hard candy of the word. Okay? You can't just gulp it down like milk. You can't chew it up like a piece of meat. You have to ponder it. You have to roll it around for a little while. You have to let it sit, and then the sweetness will ooze out. And that is abundantly true with what Solomon is saying in Proverbs 13:12. Because if we aren't careful, we're just going to look at this proverb, and we're going to think something like this. Well, when we don't get what we want, we aren't happy. When we do get what we want, we are. Profound, isn't it? Thanks, Solomon. I already knew that, right? The wisest guy ever. It's just being a real wise guy to us. Thank you, my friend. But actually, what Solomon's doing here, he's actually getting to the core of who we are. He's getting down to the essence of what it means to be human to show us our only true source of hope. See, this proverb helps us wisely handle our hope. So what we want to look at this morning is, how can we wisely handle our hope? So Solomon, please tell us, how can we wisely handle these hopes that have so often disappointed us? And Solomon's going to give us three ways this morning. And the first thing that he shows us is this: it's that we were made for hope. So how can we wisely handle our hope? The first thing we have to acknowledge is the fact that we were actually made to hope. So in this proverb, we've got two words that get to root of what it means to be human, and those are hope and desire. Who we are is made up of what we hope in and what we long for. That's what Solomon is getting at in this proverb. And that hope is part of how God designed us to live and function in this world. So what is that hope then? What is this hope that Solomon is talking about? Well, this word hope essentially is a desire that gets connected to a logical expectation of something good coming. So it's like this confidence that something better is just up ahead. Hope is looking forward to a positive outcome. There's anticipation in hope. There's oftentimes joy and excitement that comes when we're looking forward to something. I mean, we hope in things all the time, don't we? We hope that if we eat less ho-hos and move a little more, parts of our body will magically shrink. Right? We hope that if we save more than we spend, we can finally buy the karaoke machine we've been dreaming of and people will find our true talents. Some of you, I know. We hope that we sweep up the crumbs from the piece of cake we ate at midnight, we won't get caught and no one will ever know. It wasn't us. Yeah, we hope in things all the time, but what we have to see is that God actually made us that way. We were made with something in us that pulls us along day by day towards something better. Solomon actually describes this in Proverbs chapter 4, verse 18, when he says this. He says, "The path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, which shines brighter and brighter until full day." What's he saying? The path of the righteous person, it's as if every day there's something ahead of him, something brighter that he should move towards. He also says it this way in Proverbs 10:28, "The hope of the righteous brings joy, but the expectation of the wicked will perish." Hope is a good thing. It was God's idea, and it's his tool. It's his tool to pull us along toward the purposes he's set out for each and every one of us. In fact, if you look at God's design for the universe, you'll see that God built hope into it from the very beginning. So think about it. When God first made Adam, he didn't immediately create Eve, did he? So he created Adam, and then he gives Adam a job. What's the job that Adam has to do? He has to watch all of the animals come in front of him, and he has to name them, right? Maybe they came in alphabetical order. I don't know. Okay? Aardvark, antelope, alligator, albatross, anteater, Arctic fox, Arctic tern. That's all I got. Okay. But he begins naming them, doesn't he? And the Bible actually describes a picture where Adam's naming the animals, and the more he names them, the more forlorn he gets because he notices that they all have pairs, but he has no one. He's alone, isn't he? And we see the first delayed hope, don't we? And God fulfills Adam's hope. He creates Eve. And the moment that he creates Eve, Adam just bursts out into poetry. Okay, you should read it. It's pretty incredible. Very romantic, right? Adam sees Eve, and the first thing he does is, "At last, bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh." It's beautiful. I don't know if he sang it. I don't know if he just said it. I don't know if it was awkward or not. No one else was there. It was just him and Adam and the animals, so we don't know. But what happened? That first "at last" of delayed gratification came in the perfect garden. Have you ever thought about that? The first "at last" of a hope being fulfilled came on day 6 before the fall ever occurred. And in that, God wanted Adam to understand that he could be trusted to provide for his needs, couldn't he? God's just saying, open me. I'll give you what you need. I mean, even in the fact that the Garden of Eden wasn't yet heaven, was it? It was a perfect place. Adam and Eve didn't lack anything, but there was the potential that in the Garden of Eden, they could lose what they had, couldn't they? And so Adam is tasked with guarding the garden and being on the lookout for danger. They're given a day of rest where they can look forward and hope to the future when God would give them a forever home with him. And in the middle of that garden, there's a tree. The tree of life. And that tree was this visible, touchable, tastable reminder that God would fulfill all of their desires. So they could freely go and enjoy the tree of life. And when they did, they found satisfaction. They found their desires fulfilled. And they didn't hunger, and they didn't thirst, and they never experienced broken relationships. They never experienced death in those days. There was no tension between what God had promised them and what they had. They met, didn't they? And there's the tree of life, and it's the symbol of God's sure commitment to keep his perfect promises in their lives. If Adam looked forward to everything coming from his God as God made him to do, his life would be full of joy and full of satisfaction. God's just simply saying, hope in me and I will never disappoint you. And from the beginning, God hardwired humans. He hardwired us with hopes so that we would look to him in expectation that he could fulfill those hopes. That's why you hope for things, because God made you that way. So would you just for a moment, would you pause and think about the fact that you were made for hope? What have you been wanting this last week? What have you been thinking, man, if I just had that, things would be better? What have you been expecting? Wow, I can't wait for this to come. Would you just see that all of those expectations, those looking forwards, those hopes were given to you so that you would find their fulfillment in your Creator? That's why you were made. You were made to hope. But there's a problem, isn't there? And Solomon goes right after it in this proverb, because hope can actually make us sick. I mean, even as you're hearing me talk about hopes that way, some of you have been failed by your hopes so many times that you're even a little cynical. Oh, great. Because you've seen how hope can make you sick. And the very things that were designed to give us fulfillment actually lead us to hopelessness. So what is often our path to hopelessness? It's the hopes that don't come true. So how can we wisely handle our hopes? Well, the first step is to realize that we've been created for hope, but there's something else we have to see. And Solomon goes right after it. Look at the first part of the proverb in verse 12. He says this, hope deferred makes the heart sick. We were made for hope, but we've all been disappointed by hope, haven't we? Hope deferred makes the heart sick. You don't have to look very hard to see that our hopes have been broken. They've disappointed us. They don't bring us what we want, and we've all been disappointed by that. So let's go back to the Garden of Eden for a moment, because something terrible happened there that broke hope. Sin infected what God intended for us. Actually, even the first sin, you could say, was Adam and Eve hoping in something other than God to meet their needs. They hoped that they would become wise, knowing good and evil, by eating the fruit of the tree that God commanded them not to eat. And the first hope disappointment enters the earth when Eve takes and eats of that apple and gives it to her husband who was with her, and he eats of it, and immediately hope disappoints. Because, yes, they knew good and evil, but it wasn't what they thought it was it? And hope ended in disappointment. And it's been that way ever since. This is the world we live in. We live in a world where deferred hope is a daily reality for us, isn't it? I mean, that scenario gets played out over and over again in our life, where we hope in something, and we get it, and it doesn't deliver what we thought it was going to. Or we hope in something, and we don't get it, and we're left in despair. Hope disappoints. And the passage calls it hope deferred. Hope deferred. So what does it mean that hope is deferred? Well, it's when our hopes don't bring us what we thought they should. That's what it means, that hope is deferred. It's when we're expecting something and it doesn't come. Hope deferred is when we never get the things we always wanted. Hope deferred is when we can't just find the things that we're looking for. That's hope deferred. Because the word defer, it's a unique Hebrew word. It's very unique. It means something much worse than just being postponed. Okay, so we think hope deferred. Oh, that just means it's postponed to a later date. It just picks a different date on the calendar. I'll just wait for it to come around again. It actually means something far worse than that. The word used for defer here means that something is constantly postponed for a never-ending extension of time. Constantly postponed for a never-ending extension of time. It has to be just around the corner, we think. Like, I'm sure there will be something better just ahead, but there isn't. I'm sure this situation is going to get fixed, or I'm sure they're going to get the cabin cleaned on the plane I'm waiting for. Sure. They said they would. I'm sure they're going to come over the intercom and they're going to call my group to board. I just want to get home. I just want to see my family. Maybe I should just rent a car and drive. That seems actually faster than what's taking place right in front of me. Right? Maybe that maintenance issue is going to get fixed soon, and I'll get on this plane and I'll go where I want to go. That's what hope deferred is like. It's always just right out there. I have a very vivid memory of this. I was coming home from working at a camp up in Wisconsin. I'd worked there all summer. And at the beginning of the summer, I'd been dating a girl and the other girl that I dated in my life. And we flew up there together, right? And as circumstances would have it, by the end of the summer, I was no longer dating said girl. Hope was deferred, you might say. And wouldn't you know it, we were booked on the same flight back home at the end of the summer. We landed for a connecting flight in Chicago, and we settled in for a layover, which I learned would be the most awkward layover I've ever experienced in my life, because our flight home got delayed an hour, and then 2 hours, and then three, and then three and a half, and then just mercifully canceled at 8 p.m. So my hope of just getting this trip over with was deferred as I had to stand in line to get her own place to stay and get meal vouchers and then a shuttle trip to and from the airport and then one very quiet ride from Chicago O'Hare to Greenville Spartanburg Airport. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. The only difference between that trip and what Solomon is describing here is that I actually got home one day. Solomon is saying that there's something about our hopes on this earth that are always deferred. So without wisdom, all of our hopes end up that way, constantly postponed for a never-ending extension of time, never really giving us what we thought that they would, never delivering, always disappointing. So how does our hope defer? How does our hope disappoint us? It disappoints us when the things that we hope for don't come true. I mean, that's obvious, right? When the things that we really want to happen don't, hope is deferred. It's deferred in questions like, will I ever find a job? Will I ever get a raise? Will the stock market ever get to a point where I can retire? Will my spouse and I ever stop fighting? Will we ever get pregnant? Will I ever even get married? Will the person that I'm praying for ever get saved? Am I ever going to get to serve God in the way that I always wanted to? Will I ever find victory over this sin that has plagued me for years? And at the end of all the things that we've really wanted, all we find is heart sickness. When is hope deferred? It's when the things that we hope for don't come true. You know what? That's a personal thing. But it's also a global thing, isn't it? It's a universal thing. And our world exists in a state of hope deferred. Hoping for something that just doesn't seem to come. It just seems to get eternally postponed. I mean, flip through your social media news feed right now. Turn on the news. Read the paper. What do you see? People wanting something that just doesn't come. Hoping for a world of justice and peace and unity and harmony. And when you read what they're saying, when you listen to them, what are you hearing? It's as if they're trying to add their voice. They're trying to do their part to bring back something that they're looking for. Our world is broken. Why? Because of hope deferred. And this is a much bigger problem than racism and classism, isn't it? Our world is full of broken people, and sin has kept us from the things that we long for most. And so our heart cries out, Lord, please. Pain, despair, and violence. And it's not just our hearts that are sick. Our world is sick, isn't it? Hope is deferred when the things that we hope for don't come true. But it's also deferred when the things we hope for do come true. So obviously we understand that if we don't get something, that that's going to hurt. But Solomon's getting at something even deeper. Because hope deferred happens when we get the things that we always hoped for. For instance, you get the job you dreamed of, but somehow it disappoints. Everything started so well. Like, everything was great between you and your boss, your coworkers. It was awesome. But now it's just this competition. And you are always losing the game. Right? You always thought you'd be a great parent. You dreamed about what it would be like to be a parent, what your kids would be like. And then you realize that you are actually a horrible parent and your kids are sinners. And now somehow your only plan is just survival, love each other, and not kill each other. It's a very simple parenting strategy now. Your friends that you wanted so desperately, these companions that you wanted to have by your side, hurt you. And none of your relationships seem to go past the surface level. They're all trite, and you don't feel like you have a real friend who knows you and cares about you, even though you're surrounded by people that call themselves your friends. Hope is deferred when we get the things we want. Hope is deferred even when we look at our own souls and all of our accomplishments, and we haven't been the person we wanted underneath all of it. To get to where we are, We've either let ourselves off the hook or we've blamed others, and instead of learning from failures, we just rehearse how hard everything was to get to where we're at today. And even our biggest hopes for ourselves are deferred. You see, hope is deferred when it promises something but never delivers, and our life becomes just this weird, endless cycle where we want and we get, and we want and we get. And we want, and we get, and we want, and we get, and we want. Period. It's never enough, is it? We're always looking around the next corner, just hoping that there will be something there. Listen to this great word by a Puritan theologian. His name's William Arnott. He says this, "Many, after waiting long and expecting eagerly, discover when at last they reach their object that it is a withered branch and not a living tree." When the human heart has been set on perishable things, after the sickness of deferred expectation comes the sorer sickness of satiated possession. If the world be made the portion of our souls, to want it is one sickness, to have it is another. The one is a hungry mouth empty, the other is a hungry mouth filled with sand. The clog of disappointed possession is a more nauseous sickness than the aching of disappointed desire. Anyone ever been disappointed by hope? Yeah. The question is, what do we do about it? I think most people universally agree that hope disappoints, but what do most people do about it? Like, when you look around at the world, It's easier to assess other people, so let's just assess other people for a little bit, and then maybe if we can be honest, we'll let the truth hit our own hearts. But when we assess other people, right, I know a guy, I've seen this. How do people handle those deferred hopes? Well, one way that they handle it is they never stop looking for something new. So they're constantly looking for something else. They never stop looking. So since you haven't found what you're looking for, you obviously just need something new. I need a new city. I need a new job. I need a new wife, a new husband, a new lover. I need a new place to go. And we're just constantly changing. So if we want something we don't have, we shouldn't wait. We should just go and buy it. Don't worry about whether you can afford it. So if we want sex, we should just go find it. Like download Tinder, swipe, whichever way. Get online. Look at something. Find what you're looking for. So if no Christian men or women are paying attention to you and you really want to get married, I mean, there's probably like a really nice non-Christian guy out there somewhere, right? And it'll be fine because I really want it and my desires can't be that bad, can they? And your heart sickness is a frantic pursuit to quiet the nag of hope deferred in your soul. Some people, they just frantically never stop looking. Or, on the other side, we just give up on hope altogether. We just stop hoping. This is the cynic. This is the stoic. The person who has been disappointed by hope too many times. And so they've just shut off hope altogether. They've stopped expecting something good because all the times that they've expected good before have ended in ruin. You just wanted to serve God, to find a good job, a good career, and it was as if God betrayed you because you wanted something good. I mean, come on. I just want to serve him. You prayed for victory over a besetting sin, and it didn't come, and your soul begins to close up, and you just stop hoping. And you've prayed and you've prayed and you've shared the gospel over and over again and they still haven't trusted Christ and your hopes begin to dim and you stop expecting anything good and you just resign yourself to a cold, indifferent withdrawal from God and other people because you've been hurt one too many times. How's that working out for you? It's horrible, isn't it? I mean, Solomon, you're right. Hope deferred does make the heart sick. So neither of those things are the answer. We can't just turn off hope, can we? We were made for it. It's a part of who we are. Proverbs 18:14 actually says it this way. A man's spirit sustains him in sickness, but a crushed spirit who can bear? You can't turn off hope. It's the thing that is given to you to make it through life. If you turn off hope, there's no reason to live. We also can't expect our hopes to be fulfilled in something on this earth. Our hopes are way too big. Our desires are too strong to be met by something here on this earth. The things of this earth are just too small to match what God made us to live for. You see, we were made for hope. Weren't we? And that hope was given to us so we would find our desires met by a holy and righteous and fulfilling God. But something's wrong, isn't it? We've all been disappointed by hope. So follow the progression with me. We were made for hope, but hope disappoints us. And the reason that is because we have the wrong kind of hope. So if your hope disappoints you, you have the wrong kind of hope. That's what Solomon is telling us. If your hope has left you heartsick, it's because you have the wrong hope. Because Solomon goes right at what fulfills our hearts in the second part of verse 12. Look at verse 12. He says, "A desire fulfilled is a tree of life." There is a hope that never disappoints. There is a desire that can be fully satisfied. There is a hope that will always come true. We can be satisfied in hope. And Solomon shows us how. So when Solomon says, hope deferred makes our heart sick, but when the desire comes, it's a tree of life, is he simply saying, when times are good, we're happy, and when times are bad, we're sad? No. He's saying something much more than that. He's saying that deep down inside every one of us is a desire. So that word desire there, it's actually attached to our personality, towards who we are. There's a deep inner longing within every one of us that says things like, if I just had that, then my life would mean something. If I just had that thing, then everything would be better. I'd be somebody. I know I'm okay. But when we say those things to anything other than God, we're bound to be disappointed, aren't we? We have been disappointed because they never deliver. Nothing on this earth is big enough to hold up every one of our hopes and dreams, is it? Nothing on this earth, it doesn't. We've tried, and we've seen how hope has made our hearts sick. You see, the only hope that never fails isn't a thing. It's a person, and his name is Jesus. See, the book of Romans chapter 15 tells us this. It tells us that the God of hope itself will fill us with all joy and peace in believing, so that the power of the Holy Spirit may abound in us in hope. So what Solomon is saying is that when we cast our deepest hopes into God, they are always fulfilled. May the God of hope, may hope itself fill you with all joy and all peace in believing. So when our hopes long to be filled up, it's the desire that we would run to God and he would fill them, because he never disappoints. There is a hope that satisfies. And when our desire is fulfilled in the only place that it can be fulfilled, it becomes a tree of life. That's what Solomon tells us. So what is the tree of life? Well, it actually only occurs in a few places in our Bibles. Four of them are here in the book of Proverbs, and then they're in two other books. Do you remember what those two other books are? I'll give you a hint. Start at the beginning and then look at the end, okay? It's found in Genesis and Revelation, right? In the book of Genesis, the tree of life was that place where Adam and Eve could find their hopes and desires fulfilled. It was the symbol of satisfaction in the Lord's presence, wasn't it? But sin came, and we lost the tree of life in the garden, didn't we? God sent an angel with a flaming sword to guard the tree of life and the Garden of Eden, because we turned to our own masters, we hoped in something other than God, and God said, you've cut yourself off from the tree of life. But the Bible actually tells us that that tree of life still exists. It still exists. God didn't uproot it and destroy it. He didn't chop it down. In fact, it's right now planted in the presence of God. So it appears again in the book of Revelation in chapter 22. And it says this, that there is the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb. And in the middle of that river is the tree of life, yielding its fruit. No longer will there be anything accursed, but the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in it. And his servants will worship him. They will see his face, and night will be no more. They will need no light of lamp or sun, for the Lord God will be their light, and they will reign forever and ever. So that tree of life that was that source of satisfaction and fulfillment for Adam and Eve still exists. It's right now in the presence of God, ready for his children to enjoy forever with him. It isn't on earth right now, but it still exists, doesn't it? So can we ever have access to it again? Is there any way that we can ever get back to the tree of life? Yes, we can have access to the tree of life. But it doesn't come through hoping in the right thing on this earth. It doesn't come from looking for the right circumstance and then, aha, we've finally found it. Our needs are met on this earth. No, it comes through Jesus Christ. You see, in the Garden of Eden, God told Adam and Eve to obey him about the tree. Obey me about the tree and you will live. Don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of the good and evil. Obey me about the tree and you will live. And they didn't. And centuries later, Jesus comes to another garden. And in that garden, his father tells him, obey me about the tree. And he does. And we can live. Because when Jesus obeys his father about the tree, it isn't a tree of life, it's a tree of death. He climbs on the cross and he dies. But here's the thing, that death isn't defeat for Jesus. That death is victory. That loss is actually gain. The cross was a tree of death for Jesus, but because he endured it, because he rose again, he can offer to all of us access to the tree of life. And what was once lost, our joy, our satisfaction, our hopes in God can be restored in Jesus. And our bondage to looking for something on this earth to satisfy is broken. Because think about it. In hoping in the one who is victorious in death, what can we possibly lose? His defeat worked the greatest victory we've ever seen. So whether we win or lose, or whether we have or lack, he can fulfill the deepest desires underneath all of our desires. And when that desire is met, it's a tree of life for us. It's not the tree of life, but it is a tree of life. A source of satisfaction and hope. So how does this work then? Take your hopes. Whether you get what you hoped in or not, God offers you a tree of life. It's beautiful. When you hope in God above all your other hopes and you don't get them, you still have hope because your hope is in the one who found victory through loss. When you hope in God above all your other hopes and they do come true, nothing is more valuable than the precious treasure of knowing Christ. So though I suffer the loss of all things, I gain that I may know him, the immeasurable riches of knowing Christ. And at the end of all of our losses and all of our gains, we can have Christ and we have all we need. And in Christ, hope is never deferred. All of our longings, all of our disappointments, all of our hopes, all of our dreams find their rest in him. He's made us to hope in him. And then he came and died so that he might fulfill all of those hopes in him. So run to him today. Hope in God. There's this beautiful story in Matthew chapter 11 that really illustrates this perfectly. So in Matthew chapter 11, Jesus is beginning his public ministry. And there's a man named John the Baptist that we learn of throughout the Gospels. He's a unique guy, right? The Bible tells us that he wears burlap and eats locusts dipped in honey. It's like the first hipster, okay? He was eating locusts before it was cool, okay? John the Baptist. And what he has done is he's heralded Jesus' coming. Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. He proclaimed that the Messiah was here when he saw Jesus. He baptized thousands of Jesus' followers. But in Matthew chapter 11, he's in prison. And you can imagine what he's thinking. I mean, if Jesus is the Messiah, why am I in prison? I mean, if this guy named Jesus is everything that the Bible says he is, then why am I still in chains? And so John the Baptist sends some of his disciples to go and find Jesus and ask him this question. He says, are you the Messiah or should we look for another? You know what Jesus answers? He says this, John, don't set your hope in getting out of prison. Set your hope in me. I'm the Messiah. And I'm all that you need. And the way that Jesus answers that, the way that Jesus says that, is he starts quoting these promises from the book of Isaiah. these promises about how the Messiah would come and what he'd be like. And he says this in Matthew 11, 4 through 6. Go and tell John what you hear and see. And then he does these miracles, the book of Luke tells us. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, and the dead are raised up, and the poor have good news preached to them. And blessed is the one who is not offended by me. You know why that's interesting? Because Jesus actually stops quoting one of the Isaiah passages. In Isaiah 61, he doesn't quote to them that the Messiah's coming will be a time where he proclaims liberty to captives and the opening of the prison to those who are bound. And in that, Jesus is basically saying this: yes, I am the Messiah. Set your hope in me. I will never fail you, but you aren't getting out of prison. Because there's a bondage. There's a bondage that is bigger than chains and prison doors, and that's the bondage of hearts to hoping in the wrong things. I have come to set hearts free to hope in me alone. And the same words have to be whispered into all of our deferred hopes as well. Don't set your hopes in that circumstance or that outcome. Set your hope in me, Jesus tells us. I am the hope that will over and over again satisfy you. So rehearse to your heart what the writer of Lamentations says in Lamentations chapter 3. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him. So what do we do with all of our deferred hopes? We cast them on the one that can fulfill all of them in himself, whether they come true or don't. Because we were made for hope, weren't we? But we've all seen how that hope has disappointed us. And in God's grace and mercy, he sends us hope with a name, Jesus himself, who comes to bring us access to the tree of life. Hope in God. Why are you cast down, gospel grace? Why is your soul disquieted within you? Hope in God, for we shall yet praise him. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. Let's bow our heads and close our eyes.